I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is May 3rd, 2009. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, astronomy news. This story taken from January 15th, 2009. Methane discovery means there may be life on Mars. Scientists using Earth-based telescopes have taken detailed measurements of the gas methane on Mars, a finding that supports the possibility of underground life. The scientists from NASA and other U.S. institutions found high concentrations of methane that are consistent with methane plumes produced by underground bacteria on Earth. The observations have reignited a life on Mars debate that began in 1996 when NASA astrobiologist David McKay and several other colleagues announced that a meteorite from Mars contained evidence of bacteria. Since then, in absence of more substantive proof, most scientists have discounted McKay's findings, but that may now change. McKay, who works at Johnson Space Center, said, "I think this is an extremely strong evidence for current life on Mars. It doesn't prove it, but to me, that is very strong support for the microbial life theory that we have been promoting with evidence for a number of years." The new methane data collected by NASA senior scientist Michael Mumma and other planetary scientists found that concentrations of the gas varied greatly by location and season on Mars. The primary plume they found contained about 19,000 metric tons of methane, which is comparable to the methane produced at the large hydrocarbon seep coal oil point in California, where underwater bacteria produce methane by producing hydrocarbons. Further studies during future missions to Mars are needed to determine whether the methane originates from biological or non-biological sources. Although it is possible to produce methane through inorganic processes, those typically do not produce the concentrations of methane observed on Mars. These methane concentrations are an indicator that there might be life. If methane were absent, you would be able to argue more forcefully there isn't life on Mars. This next story from April 23rd, space blob baffles astronomers. It is a Lyman Alpha blob and is 55,000 light-years across, as large as present-day galaxies. Though younger such blobs have been found, Himiko confounds the idea that such large objects grew more recently by the merger of smaller ones. The research will be published in the Astrophysical Journal. Current cosmology models hold that between 200 million and 1 billion years after the Big Bang, the first colossal stars formed, emitting radiation that stripped light elements of their electrons and turned the universe into a soup of charged particles. Only after this reionization epoch did matter as we know it really start to clump together. A number of theories of Lyman Alpha blob formation abound, but all are difficult to test. Objects as big as modern-day galaxies should have taken significant time to build up from mergers of smaller chunks of matter. So when a group of researchers led by Masami Uchi at the Carnegie Institution searched among 207 distant galaxy candidates using the Subaru telescope at the peak of Mauna Kea in Hawaii, they expected to find smaller galaxies. "We hesitated to spend our precious telescope time by taking spectra of this weird candidate. We never believed that this bright and large source was a real distant object," said Dr. Uchi. The team went on to measure the characteristic emission from hydrogen, the Lyman Alpha radiation of the name, and confirmed the blob was some 12.9 billion light-years away. They then trained the Spitzer Space Telescope, very large array, and the United Kingdom infrared telescope on the object to determine how much mass is contained in the blob, or rather, how much was contained 12.9 billion years ago. Himiko, named after a mysterious queen of Chinese and Japanese legend, contains more than 10 times as much mass as galaxies of similar age. The blob was first noticed in data from the Subaru telescope. There are two possibilities. The standard scenario of galaxy formation is wrong, or this particular object is showing something unique. A range of possibilities could explain the massive nature of Himiko. It could have a supermassive black hole at its center, or perhaps it is a single giant galaxy with a large mass of about 40 billion suns. Dr. Uchi said the team was proposing observations using the Keck telescope in the far infrared region to establish the rate of star formation happening inside Himiko, and whether star formation could lead to the nebula of ionized gas that accounts for its enormous size. Many earlier theories of galaxy formation predicted a Lyman alpha fuzz around early galaxies. The problem is that no one is entirely sure what mechanism gives rise to the extended emission. A number of theories of Lyman alpha blob formation abound, but all are difficult to test. We now have several good models that seem to do a good job of reproducing many qualities of the observable universe. There is room for improvement, however, and explaining these Lyman alpha blobs is a prime example. Both Dr. Uchi and Dr. Geach agree that future wide-field searches that scan larger swaths of the sky are likely to uncover many more such extended blobs. But Dr. Geach added, until we know more about their physics, their connection to the formation of galaxies, and perhaps most importantly their lifetimes, we don't really know how they fit in. And a third story from the world of astronomy, from April 23rd, Why is Moon Dust Sticky? A physicist says he has the answer. One of the biggest problems facing America's space agency as it prepares to return to the moon is how to manage lunar dust. It gets into everything. Worse, it's sticky, adhering to spacesuits and posing a potentially serious health hazard to future colonists. Now a scientist who has been studying the problem off and on for over four decades thinks he may have untangled the mystery of why that dust is so sticky. The sun's ultraviolet and X-ray radiation gives a positive charge to the dust, making it stick to surfaces such as spacesuits. This doesn't happen on Earth because our atmosphere screens out much of the sun's harmful radiation. The moon's atmosphere is so thin that the rays easily reach the surface. The angle of the sun's rays influences the stickiness. The more direct the sunlight, the stickier the dust. Lunar dust is a bloody nuisance, O'Brien said. In 1970, he published a paper showing that lunar dust kicked up by the Apollo 11 lunar module that carried Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin back into space coated the surface of a seismometer left behind on the moon's surface. The ground motion sensor overheated and failed after 3 years. More than three decades later, in 2006, O'Brien's fascination with lunar dust was rekindled when he learned that NASA had misplaced the original tapes from his dust-detecting experiments. Now 75 and retired, O'Brien traced his desire to unravel the 40-year-old problem to old-fashioned enduring interest and curiosity. Over 2 years of painstaking research, O'Brien tracked the dust accumulating on two solar cells, one horizontal and one vertical, over the course of two lunar days. That may not sound like much time, but a lunar day equals nearly 30 days on Earth. He found that little dust collected on the horizontal cell in the lunar morning when the sun's rays were slanted, while more dust adhered to the vertical cell, which more directly faced the rising sun. The weaker the sun's rays, he found, the weaker the electrostatic forces causing the dust particles to stick until the dust fell off. Some scientists believe that one of the greatest challenges for future lunar colonists will be keeping their lungs free of particles, each thinner than a human hair, but sharp as a razor. Based on his research, which is to be published in the Journal of Geophysical Research Letters, O'Brien thinks colonists will be able to combat the dust problem with a practical, earth-tested solution: old-fashioned sunscreen. There might be other approaches, O'Brien said, but I leave that stuff to the engineers responsible for the safety of the astronauts. NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston, the home of the manned spaceflight program, is working on the dust problem, too. Several scientists there have been in contact with O'Brien. Officials didn't challenge O'Brien's findings, nor did they endorse them. There are several models that predict how lunar dust behaves on the moon, and very little evidence to validate those models. We probably will not know its true behavior until we return. And now we go to the science segment. This story from February 3rd, The Fountain of Youth Discovered. A potential immortal jellyfish species that can age backward, the Benjamin Button of the deep, is silently invading the world's oceans. Like the Brad Pitt movie character, the immortal jellyfish transforms from an adult back into a baby, but with an added bonus. Unlike Benjamin Button, the jellyfish can do it over and over again, though apparently only as an emergency measure. About as wide as a human pinky nail when fully grown, the immortal jellyfish was discovered in the Mediterranean Sea in 1883, but its unique ability was not discovered until the 1990s. The jellyfish typically reproduces the old-fashioned way, by the meeting of free-floating sperm and eggs. And most of the time they die the old-fashioned way, too. But when starvation, physical damage, or other crises arise, instead of sure death, the jellyfish transforms all of its existing cells into a younger state. The jellyfish turns itself into a blob-like cyst, which then develops into a polyp colony, essentially the first stage in jellyfish life. The jellyfish's cells are often completely transformed in the process. Muscle cells can become nerve cells or even sperm or eggs. Through asexual reproduction, the resulting polyp colony can spawn hundreds of genetically identical jellyfish, near-perfect copies of the original adult. This unique approach to hardship may be helping the jellyfish swarm spread throughout the world's oceans. And now the arena goes abroad. Today we go to Kenya, where this story from April 15th, Man Bites Snake in Epic Struggle. A Kenyan man bit a python which wrapped him in its coils and dragged him up a tree during a fierce 3-hour struggle. The serpent seized farm worker Ben Nyumbi in the Malinda area of Kenya's Indian Ocean coast. Mr. Nyumbi bit the snake on the tip of the tail during the exhausting battle. Police rescued Mr. Nyumbi and captured the 13-foot reptile before taking it to a sanctuary, but it later escaped. The victim told police he managed to reach his mobile phone from his pocket to raise the alarm when the python momentarily eased its grip after hauling him up a tree. Mr. Nyumbi used his shirt to smother the snake's head and prevent it from swallowing him. His employer arrived with police and villagers, who tied the python with a rope and pulled them both down from the tree. Peter Katam, superintendent of police, told the news, "Two officers on patrol were called and they found this man was struggling with a snake on a tree. The snake had coiled his hands and was trying to swallow him, but he struggled very hard. The officers and villagers managed to rescue him, and he was freed. He himself was injured on the lower lip of the mouth. It was bleeding a little bit, as the tip of the snake's tail was sharp when he said he bit it." Mr. Nyumbi told the newspaper how he resorted to desperate measures after the python, which had apparently been hunting livestock, encircled his upper body in its coils. I stepped on a spongy thing on the ground, and suddenly my leg was entangled with the body of a huge python. I had to bite it. Katam told the BBC that the officers had wanted to shoot the snake but could not do so for fearing of injuring Mr. Nyumbe. If it wasn't for the villagers and officers who helped him, he would have been swallowed by the snake over the Easter holiday. It is very mysterious, this ability to lift the man onto the tree. They have never heard of this report before. The police officer said they took the snake to a sanctuary in Malindi Town, but it escaped overnight, probably from a gap under the door in the room where it was kept. We are still seriously looking for the snake. We want to arrest the snake because any one of us could fall victim. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, James Madison, born 1751, died 1836 at the age of 85. James Madison was an American politician and political philosopher who served as the fourth president of the United States from 1809 to 1817 and was one of the founding fathers of the United States. Considered to be the father of the Constitution, he was the principal author of the document. In 1788, he wrote over a third of the Federalist Papers, still the most influential commentary on the Constitution. The first president to have served in the United States Congress, he was a leader in the first United States Congress, drafted many basic laws, and was responsible for the first 10 amendments to the Constitution, said to be based on the Virginia Declaration of Rights, and thus is also known as the father of the Bill of Rights. As a political theorist, Madison's most distinctive belief was that the new republic needed checks and balances to protect individual rights from the tyranny of the majority. As Jefferson's Secretary of State from 1801 to 1809, before he became president, Madison supervised the Louisiana Purchase, doubling the nation's size, and sponsored the ill-fated Embargo Act of 1807. As president, he led the nation into the War of 1812 against Great Britain in order to protect the United States' economic rights. During and after the war, Madison reversed many of his positions. By 1815, he supported the creation of a second national bank, a strong military, and a high tariff to protect the new factories opened during the war. And now for the quote from James Madison. During almost 15 centuries has the legal establishment of Christianity been on trial. What has been its fruits? More or less, in all places, pride and indolence in the clergy, ignorance and servility in the laity. In both, superstition, bigotry, and persecution.
Are you ready, Bruce? Start walking.